Yeah, but before we get started, we got to let him in on the breaking news alert. All right, so earners, the time has come. EYLU Grad School is here, and you know how we bring it. Over 100 past webinars, weekly webinars from industry experts, monthly financial planning calls with Rashad, our movie and book club, access to our private investment group on Facebook, and we've just added the Home Buyer's Blueprint Volume 1 Reloaded from our brother MG the Mortgage Guy, which has over 12 hours of content to guide you through the process of buying a home with a number of home buying programs to get you through the process, y'all. And in addition to that, you now have access to our weekly mentorship calls for all things real estate hosted again by our brother MG. It's an amazing package. We put it all together. We can't wait for you to see it and be a part of it. And right now it's 50% off. So all you got to do is head over to EYLUniversity.com and you're going to get 50% off.
All right, so now we're going to go into the business of nonprofit, setting up nonprofits, because we haven't spoke about that. We spoke a little bit about charities with Derek Ferguson, but not really in depth about how to start one, because he's the head of a charity, but he didn't start that charity.
No.
Where this is, you started a charity, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, what are the steps? Can you walk us through the steps of how to start a nonprofit 501c3?
Yep.
Okay, so the first thing is you don't have to have a 501c3.
Can you just explain what a 501c3 is?
So a 501c3 allows you, according to the IRS, to be tax exempt, which then allows all donors to write off anything that they contribute to your organization. It's very important if you need large amounts of funding. If you don't, and what you're trying to do can get by on like a $1,500 budget or a $2,000 budget, you don't need the 501c3.
That budget be monthly or annually?
Annually. It just depends on what you're budgeting for. You know, some people have a plant project and they just want to plant things a couple times a year. You know, it just depends on what you're doing.
Yeah, I was told something like that the process is very long, like independent on how much you need. So like you can apply for the 501c3 for if you're anticipating having $10,000 or less.
Yeah,
that's the initial one. But mm-hmm. if you're planning more, that process takes a lot longer.
It does. And I actually, so we incorporated the organization and then we filed for the 501c3 at the same time. And it was about 3 or 4 months later, I planned our first annual fundraiser because we needed the funding to really get started on what we were trying to accomplish. And in my mind, I'm thinking, if you look online, it tells you you can get approved for a 501c3 between 2 to 12 months. So of course I'm always being optimistic, and I'm like, well, 3 to 4, we might make it. We didn't. So we did the first fundraiser, and of course people are going to give very minimal amounts because they can't write it off. And it's a huge incentive for any donor to know that not only am I helping this cause, but I can also, it'll help me with my taxes. So we didn't get it approved in time, but we ended up getting it a year later.
So, all right, what's the process to get a 501c3? Like, what do you have to do to get one?
There's a long application. There's a long application, and you have to be organized and have everything. You have to answer with as many details as possible. If you want to get approved without questions first from the IRS.
What kind of questions? All right. So
mission statement. Okay. You need a mission statement. Mm-hmm. You need the name. Everything that you would need to do to start a business. You have to be very clear about what you're doing. And when I say mission statement, it's funny, I'm remembering this now. The IRS actually came back and said that our mission statement was too broad. And that's why we didn't get approved the first time around. I think the initial mission statement was to help foster and homeless youth self-comfort. That could mean anything. So then we had to go in and revise the mission, apply with the state to change that, and then resubmit the application for the 501c3.
Now, is this something that you did yourself, or did you have lawyers involved?
I hired help. Okay. Yeah, definitely hired help. And I would recommend, if anybody doesn't already have that experience in the nonprofit sector, hire where you need, especially when it comes to accounting. Get the support so that the first time around you're not making those mistakes.
So when you had to narrow down your mission statement, like what was your revised mission statement?
So now the mission statement is helping foster and homeless youth self-comfort by providing comfort items for bedtime and programs that inspires them to self-soothe.
And that was okay.
And that was okay.
So then, all right. So you have that you have to set it up as a business, like you have like an LLC set up?
Not an LLC, but it's the same steps of like having to, you don't have to trademark, but I highly recommend it because the work of a nonprofit easily inspires someone else to want to do similar work, and they can take your name and do it in another state if they want to. So trademarking, I highly recommend filing for the setup for the nonprofit the same way you would with the LLC okay. for your state. And then applying for that 501c3 early if you expect or if you want to receive large funds.
And there's like a fee for that?
Yes, there's a fee. There's a fee for every application. So you have to have some funds to get started. When I applied in 2012, I think the 501c3 application was like $800. I'm not sure if it's increased since then, but yes, you definitely need something in order to get started.
Okay, so you do the application, you get, well, as the 501c3 is going through the process, because it could take up to a year, mm-hmm. what else do you need to get off the ground to start the actual charity?
Everything.
Can you explain that?
So you need a website.
Okay.
You need a marketing plan. You need a business plan.
Marketing plan. Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Because, all right. How do you?
So now, before you even go into that, like, this is you and someone else, like the co-founder. Like, who else is doing this?
So the co-founder was my mother, but right. No, she was living her best life in Florida. So my mom was not involved in, you know, actually getting the organization started. I was doing this on my own with the help of friends
okay.
who believed in me and the organization. So that's the next step in like, and I'll get back to marketing, but you need a marketing plan. You need a business plan. You need a board of directors. You need people that are going to hold you accountable, which most people don't know. So when you're applying for this paperwork, you can't just put your name on it. If people are giving donations, the IRS wants to know who else is tracking these dollars to make sure that you're not out here spending these funds in the wrong way. So when I first started, and I think most people when they start nonprofits, it's usually people that are very connected to you as well as the mission. And so they'll sign on to support you. And that's usually how the board starts. And then eventually it grows.
You have to have a board of directors.
Yes.
How many people?
Three.
Non-negotiable. You have to.
You have to.
Got it.
They have to have titles or they're just board of directors?
Yes. And they need titles. So you need a president, you need a treasurer, and you need a secretary.
And that's New York State standard or federal?
New York State.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all right, you have those three people. Those people have to actually be active?
They should be active. So here's the thing.
Kindly
it's
recommended.
Like, kindly recommended because they're putting themselves on the line by signing that paperwork, okay. right? So if you have someone sign as a secretary and it's your cousin, but they're not actually doing the work, if you get audited or there's an issue, they're going to come looking for you and your cousin. So everybody should understand how serious it is when they are signing that paperwork.
Okay. Can we talk about marketing?
Yeah.
So how do you put together a marketing plan for a nonprofit organization? Because it's different, right? Like we're marketing, let's say we want to market our podcast, right? Or you're marketing a product, right? It's a little different than marketing for a nonprofit because it's charity.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like you kind of, it's kind of, a, in my opinion, it's a little delicate walk because you don't want to make it seem like you're selling something, but obviously you need funds. We're going to talk about fundraising, but you need funds. So how do you do that? Like, how do you market for a charity?
I think the two most important things to consider when marketing is who is your target audience? And then also, what do your donors need to see and understand in order to give? Mm-hmm. So the more your donors know, the more they will give, period. Making sure that in everything that you do, whether it's just utilizing social media, that every image, every caption, every meme, everything that you're sharing explains the mission clearly. Transparency is the number one thing in trying to solicit donors. Marketing. So making sure that you are marketing towards the people that you need to do the service, right? So when I started this organization, I wanted to market this towards people who run the foster care agencies in New York City, as well as the homeless shelters. So figuring out what do they need to see in order to understand what our services are. And that's sometimes is simply putting together a kit that explains and breaks everything down. Here's the mission. Here's our values. Here's our logo. Here's our one-year plan. Here's the program that we can provide or the curriculum, just depending on what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And ironing all of that out so that they can understand it, and then they choose whether or not they want to work with you.
So you're pretty much, I mean, you're not selling in the sense of an item, but you're selling your vision and your passion.
Yeah.
In a sense, right?
Yeah. And making it clear. I mean, there's another nonprofit, a friend of mine runs an organization called Kicks for the City. It's a very simple mission. They give shoes to the homeless. So in all of their packaging, they're showing photos, images of sneakers, images of homeless. So people can just simply connect the dots. Here's the mission, here's the value, and here's what it looks like if you give.
It's easy. So, all right. So the biggest part of charity, mm-hmm. nonprofit organization is that you have to have money, right? Yeah. It's actually a business, right? That's something that people need to understand too if you think about running a nonprofit, a successful nonprofit,
yeah.
is that you have to run it like a business because it is a business, right? So we're going to talk about funding. So nonprofits get majority of their funding from donors, right? How do you raise
it? Depends.
What's the other ways?
Yeah, it depends. You can get a majority through individual donors, through state funding, through federal funding. Those are the three right. main so ways.
Let's talk about donors.
Yeah.
What's the 101 blueprint to attract individual donors?
Reel them in so that they understand the cause and make sure that you are speaking to people who care about that mission, that specific mission. So with Precious Dreams, I had to find a way, how do I connect the issues of fostering homeless youth and make it relatable to someone who's never been in those shoes? So the first thing that we did was target parents, because parents understand the importance of comfort items. Mm-hmm. So I remember my first year I would have meetings, and one of the first questions I asked was, do you have kids? What's their bedtime routine? Do you read to them? Do they sleep in pajamas? And it immediately brings them to this happy place of thinking of like what that looks like for their kids and how important it is to them. Mm-hmm. And then I would help them vision what a typical night looks like in a homeless shelter, or what a night looks like for a foster kid who's sleeping in a room with five other families on a mattress that's on the floor. And immediately they feel connected, and then they want to give. They want to save someone because they can't understand how someone else could be lacking what their child has or what they have that they were taking for granted because they just never thought about the person who lacks.
Yeah, it's a commonality. Like, we were all children at some point.
Yeah. Right?
And we probably all have gone through some experience as a child, whether it was like somebody putting you to bed or mm-hmm. your bedtime routine. I want to go to the fact of state funding and federal funding. So like, how does that work? And are there acts or initiatives that the state provides that just like, you know what, I should target them? Or how do you go about it?
It depends on what you're doing, again, with the nonprofit. So if you're providing a service for schools or for educators, mm-hmm. it's very easy to go after state funding. If you are providing sneakers to the homeless, it's a little harder to get those grants approved because they might not see the importance in that work. It just depends on what you're doing, but those applications are available online. Mm-hmm. There's a full list of the state money that's available, federal money that's available, and you just have to see whether or not you fall along.
So, So how important is grant writers?
Grant writers are very important. They're very, very important, especially if you don't have relationships with a lot of individual donors, because you need one or the other. Grant writers and also researchers are a whole nother animal, because a lot of times, and we learned this the hard way, I thought, you know, let's find a grant writer. You find the grant writer and they're like, okay, so who's doing the grant research? Because that's a whole nother job.
Yeah, I've not even heard of that title. What is their job to do?
To research.
Everything?
Yes, and it takes hours because there are so many grants available,
yeah.
but there could be one small thing in that grant, one requirement, and yeah. your organization just doesn't fall under it. So making sure before you waste anybody's time and they're writing this full proposal that you fall in on all of the requirements that are listed for that one specific grant.
And are most of these grants government or private, or like a mixture of both?
A mix, yeah. Private, public, state, federal.
And it's just, you could just Google and probably find a lot yep. as far as for different causes, mm-hmm. right?
But yeah, a lot of them are very public. Some are invite only, which are harder to apply for.
What's that, invite only?
So there's a lot of private, especially like family foundations, where they've set up to give finances annually to different organizations, but they don't want to have thousands of applications coming in. There are over 1.5 million nonprofits in the United States. So if you are a very small, like 3 or 4 person run organization where you're trying to just simply give out $20,000 a year, you don't want 1.5 million people applying. Yeah. And so what they'll do is they'll restrict it to a certain county or a certain state, and people will have to know someone in order to get in. It's kind of like, I don't want to say mafia, but like you have to know somebody in order to even figure out what their application process is to get in the door.
It's like the members only stuff.
So where does your funding come from?
A majority of our funding comes from individual donors. And that is a gift that I've been able to receive because of the work that I've done. So in having that history, that job history at places like Madison Square Garden, where I've been able to develop relationships with the 1% in New York City, or, you know, the athletes and artists that come through and they're invited to sit courtside at our games, the Gary V's of the internet, like all of those people I developed great relationships with by them seeing my work ethic, but then also my character, seeing that I am someone who is responsible but kind. And so when I approach those people about giving to my nonprofit, the answer is yes more than no.
So do you have, because I think Derek Ferguson, the Robin Hood dinner is like $5,000 minimum. It's like $5,000 per plate.
To enter, yeah.
And it's sold out, you can't get in. And so that's crazy. But like, how do you price, how do you ask for money? And like, do you do it in galas? How do you know how much to ask for?
There's so many ways to fundraise. So many ways. So one thing that's very important, we go back and talk about boards, right? Your board of directors should be very diverse, and they should have a network far beyond your reach so that they can go out as ambassadors and promote your organization to receive funding from anyone that they're connected to. Then you can utilize social media. There's a lot of ways that you can raise money on social media. There's a lot of platforms, like GiveSmart.com is a platform that you can pay for where you can set up fundraising pages, but then it also gives you text numbers. So like the text to give, where you can send out a number and say, if you text this number, you can donate $25 instantly. That's a platform that allows you to do it. Galas are very important. Selling a ticket to provide an experience for somebody is the easiest way to fundraise. Who doesn't want to come to an open bar experience or to see a performer, to go out to have a good time? So galas are honestly probably one of the biggest ways that nonprofits are able to generate funds, especially for Precious Dreams. That's definitely our go-to every year.
You have an annual gala?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Every fall.
So on the business side, how do you know, all right, you run an organization, not you, but just anybody, right? And that's your job. So you have to make a living. You have to, you know, provide for yourself, right? So how do you know, or what's the rule of thumb? Like, how much money should you be taking for your own personal? It never really seems like it's right, because it's like a charity you don't want to take, but it's still a job. You're doing something, you know, and you got to get compensated for that, obviously. So
yeah,
especially like when you're the owner of it, because it's up to you. Like, how do you determine like how much money you take from that as your personal salary?
So I think the most important word when it comes to thriving in the nonprofit space is transparency. And annual reports are important. Mm-hmm. An annual report is more than just the 990, which you need to fill out every year so that the government knows how you're spending your money. But an annual report will break down exactly how much money went to operational costs, to programming, to office supplies, to everything. And a lot of times, big donors want to see where every dollar went last year. And if you can show that, then they will give more. Like I said earlier, the more that a donor knows, the more they will give. So we always make sure that we're very transparent about what we give, but then also making sure that they see the numbers that they'd want to see, right? So like, if I'm giving a dollar, I want to know that at least 75 cents of my dollar is going to go to the children and the images that you're showing me in this deck to that program. And so at Precious Dreams, it's interesting because I kind of mimics an idea that I saw from Usher's foundation. So Usher has the New Look Foundation, and I don't know if they still do this, but years ago, their board was covering 100% of the operational cost. And so they marketed on the website that 100% of your donation goes to the programming. And that will reel anybody in. So I went to my board. This is actually how I was able to get approved for a salary. I went to my board and said, this is what I saw, and I think that this is a great approach. And because we're only still at like the $60,000 annual level, would you guys be willing to put together a cost so that this is how much would go towards operational costs, and then this is how much that you give to the organization every year? And they voted, because voting is another thing that must happen on your board. They voted, it was approved, and they actually cover my salary. So when people donate to Precious Dreams, none of that money goes to operational costs.
Who's they?
My board of directors.
They out of their pocket?
Out of their pocket, yeah. Which says so much,
yeah,
right?
That's a
like
approach.
The highest level of leadership at my organization believes in this mission so much that out of pocket they pay for my salary.
So if rule of thumb, like if we're starting a nonprofit, what would you say the percentage would be for a nonprofit to have an operational cost?
The recommended according to like Charity Navigator would be 40% should go towards operational costs and anything outside of programming. Everything else should go towards programming. And then if it doesn't, they judge you. There's a lot of like grading systems online for nonprofits. So you will get graded on a lower scale if you are taking that money and putting it.
So if like $1 million comes in, $400,000 should go to operational costs, $600,000 should go to the charity.
Right. And that the operational costs, obviously, if you have staff with you, obviously supplies can fall in that list too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And also it's like, just accountability and being smart about how you spend that money, because there's no rule that says that you have to, but if you get an audit from the IRS and they look at how you're spending, they can pull that 501c3 at any time.
Okay. All right. That was good. That was a lot of good information.
Yeah, obviously some stuff that we're going to take advantage of, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with our podcast. We try to provide information for people. It's like a how-to manual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then from there, hopefully they'll be inspired, if they want to, you know, be inspired to, you know, seek more information. But, you know, it's like when your kid first rides a bike and you push them.
Yeah.
Then they got to start riding on their own. Yeah. But sometimes what we lack, especially in our community, is the first push.
Right.
So we just get on a bike and try to ride it. And then we just keep falling off because we've never had momentum. Right.
Yeah.
So knowledge is momentum.
Yeah.
So if you have the right knowledge, then that can propel you to heights unseen. Yeah.
Absolutely. But even if your viewers don't want to start nonprofits, I'm sure a lot of people who tune in make donations, right? So like there are certain things that you don't even know about giving just because it's not out there. Like the FML, like the fair market, no, the FMV, the fair market value of your donation. I recently produced this collaboration where Champion and Complex created this sweatshirt, this limited edition sweatshirt, where 100% of the proceeds went to Social Works. Mm-hmm. The sweatshirt was $100. $100 went to Social Works. However, a donor, anybody who purchased that sweatshirt, could not write off a $100 donation because they received a sweatshirt that had a value of $75. So really, you can only write off the difference. Even when you go to a fundraiser, if the ticket is $200, somewhere on that invitation or on the website where you're purchasing the ticket, it'll say FMV in very small letters. It's always small because most people don't want the donor to know. It'll say the level of the experience. So if you're going to an open bar experience, it'll say your FMV is $125. So if you're buying a ticket at $200, you're only able to write off $75.
Depending on who's at that event, that FMV will go up, obviously, right?
No. Who's in attendance doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
No,
Drake is a
yeah.
Drake.
No, I'm just thinking, like, if
no,
I know if
Kanye
I can,
is there.
Right, if I have Kanye there, right,
if,
then...
If he's performing.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
So if there's a performance, there's a value to that.
Okay.
If there's food, there's a value to that.
Right, and they can go up the sales that they're doing from their shows.
So. Yeah. And the nonprofit's job is to be transparent and let their donors know it ahead of time what they're going to get out of that experience and then what is the difference of what they can write off.
Education. I didn't know that. I'm a financial advisor. I never knew that. my understanding, I thought whatever you give to charity, you just write off, and it's 100%.
A lot of people do that, and a lot of people also don't even realize that they're not right. You know, you're filling it out that you're writing off that much money, but the IRS does a lot of checks.
So if you ever get audited, the IRS, they can come back and say you wrote off $100 for the dinner, but really you only get $25 because the dinner was worth $75.
Yep.
But it's up to the charity to tell you, to inform you on that. Mm-hmm. If the charity doesn't inform you on that, can that fall back on them?
It can, but the thing is, most people don't know that they're being informed by the small print. It's the same way as you look at a website. Yeah. I mean, on a commercial, you see that fine print on the bottom. That is not their responsibility if you don't read it.
Yeah. It's like the back of a ticket. Like, nobody ever looks at the back.
Well, nobody reads.
Yeah. Well, nobody looks at the back either. It's just like, I'm here. Here's my thing.
Yep. It's like Facebook. When you sign up, there's like a whole thing. We'll take your information. We'll sell it to
Or the Apple update. It's like 11 pages long. Nobody is going to read 11 pages.
But what are you not going to do it?
Yeah. Exactly. You're going to do it.
What's the alternative? Yeah, like, your charity, phone. You can have a... Apple, what are you going to say? No, I'm not going to have an iPhone.
Yeah, and I hope I'm not discouraging people to give, but definitely pay attention to that.
It's good information. I appreciate that because, like I said, that's one of the things with the podcast is that, you know, even I learn every single podcast. I learn something from the podcast. So that was something that I was not aware of.
Yeah.
And I learned something. So, yeah. But any other form of, like, charity in a regular form, that's 100% write-off, right?
As long as there's nothing received in exchange. And that's why every receipt usually says that at the bottom of the letter.
What about if you give clothes?
If you give clothes?
It's like the value of the clothes, right?
It's not the value of when you purchased it unless it's still brand new and it has a tag on it.
It's the value of what it is now. Mm-hmm. Like Salvation Army, like they give you like a ticket item.
Yep.
What's it worth?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Now that's all self-taught, right? You have to go through experience to learn all that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that plays into tax. It's all this stuff intertwines. So that plays into taxes as well. It's a tax play. And that's why a lot of wealthy people, you know, start foundations also, right?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that briefly? I wasn't really planning on talking about that. I just thought about that. A lot of athletes specifically and entertainers and stuff, they start foundations because it's a way for them to lower their taxable income. It's a tax shelter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's also a way for them to... It sounds terrible. It's also a way for athletes to have their name on something that someone else is funding. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of basketball clinics that happen. And just because you see that particular celebrity's name on the clinic doesn't mean that there's not 10 other sponsors that are coming in and actually paying for it. So, of course, you're going to get more support when you have that big name. That's why a lot of smaller organizations, grassroots like my own, will seek ambassadors and celebrities to get behind our stuff because we know when people see that name, they give more.
So how does that help them personally as far as they start a charity? How does that help them?
Write-offs. It's a write-off.
For them personally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the write-offs, so there's two parts to it. They get the write-offs by giving financially on their own, but then also it's a great marketing tool, you know? Yeah, like, I not only do this, but I also care. And you don't have to be there to do it. So Usher, I'm just going to throw that one out there again, Usher's new look. I've worked with that organization about 3 times now. We've partnered on different things. I've never worked with Usher, but every time that we do anything and they post anything and it goes on the website, it says Usher's new look.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.